Welcome to the Dog Knowledge Podcast. I'm your host, Renee Erdman. I'm a certified behavior consultant and dog trainer located in North Vancouver, BC. I own bravodog.ca, and every so often I like to bring you these interesting podcasts, or at least I hope they're interesting, touching on different topics about animal behavior. Welcome to the podcast, everyone. Today, we're going to talk about flooding. I've been seeing some things lately that have reminded me that I wanted to talk about this. And you may not even know what flooding is when it comes to working with our companion animals. But flooding, is a technique that essentially it exposes an animal to something that they're afraid of for a duration of time and does not allow them to escape. It was developed in 1967, so it's quite old, and there were some ethical concerns about it when it first was sort of implemented or introduced. And you know, I'm going to refer to an article from Eileen and Dogs. Her website is eileenanddogs.com, and she writes some fantastic articles about behavior. And I'm going to be referring to a lot of the points that she makes because I can't do it any better than she has done. She's going to outline here, you know, the human comparison would be, or example would be, if you were scared of spiders and you locked yourself into a room, or you were locked into a room and you weren't able to get out, you would be, you know, you'd be forced to stay there. And again, you know, if we have consent to do that, then that's fine. But dogs do not have consent, and so we have to really think about the ethical concerns about using this method actually with any animal. So just to clarify, going back to the human example of, you know, being locked in a room with spiders, if you're fearful of them, is the goal is that the exposure, at some point you then get over your fear because you're forced to. I don't know how effective it is. It doesn't seem like it would be. I think I would, at some point you just shut down and you just accept, well, I can't do anything about it. And that's going to be called learned helplessness. This is what animals will do when they have no way to escape, and you know, using aggressive behavior doesn't get them out of situations. So if we're talking about who is the most vulnerable or who is often flooded the most, it looks like puppies and fearful dogs are the ones exposed to this most often. And the most common mistakes made would be some of these are going to be describing some of the advice that people give that you really don't want to follow. First one would be feeding fearful dogs all meals by hand to overcome fear of humans. And while it sounds good, you have to think about the fact that the animal is forced to, if they want to eat, they have to go to that scary thing to get that food item. And there is a chance that the animal can become sensitized to people by doing that. So the opposite happens. We actually get this backfires. So you have to be careful with that. Forcing or staying in a fearful dog space and not allowing them to, so like sitting nearby when they try to eat, or sitting close, or sitting in the corner of a room for hours each day reading a book. And I remember seeing, and it was all done, it's a video that I saw circulating probably 6 months to a year ago, where a vet basically sat in the dog's kennel while the dog was eating their meals, and the dog had to just get used to it. And everybody was like, oh, what a kind person and so nice and helping the dog. I understand the intent, but it doesn't give the animal the option to remove themselves if they're feeling like they need to. And I personally don't think that that's right. There was something that I did a couple of times in, when I first started teaching puppy classes, and it was called Pass the Puppy. And it's an exercise where we all sit around in a circle and we take our puppy and we pass it to the next person, and you know, they interact. And here again, the animal's not given a choice. And so, while the average puppy could be completely fine with this, you may have a shy puppy that this could again sensitize them or make them even much more fearful. So that can backfire as well. For some dogs, going to the dog park for socialization can be considered flooding. It's fenced in, they have no option to leave. And if they're younger or fearful and they have no way to escape, this can cause problems. The same could be said for going to a big pet store for socialization. When there are slick floors, there's lots of noise, lots of strangers, or going to the night market, you're flooding them with too much stimulus, and it can cause harm. Having strangers feed treats is why I always advise the treat tossing, meaning a stranger, if they want to give a fearful dog treats, should always be tossing the treats away from themselves. And so that this doesn't force the dog to come to them. So it's similar to that hand feeding thing. You really don't want to force them to come to you, because you could be doing more harm and not achieving the goals that you had intended to achieve. Overexposing to noise is one, and it you know, dogs, they really can be noise sensitive, especially when they're puppies. So you've got to be careful about not putting them in situations where it's, you know, it's too loud and they just are completely frightened, right? I think that, you know, it's tempting to have the attitude like, oh, well, you know, the dog's got to just get over it, and you know, I'll just expose them repeatedly to what it is that they're worried about, and they'll get over it. But that's not the case. Dogs are not people. People, and if you say that to a person too, that's fearful of something, like, oh, just get over it, they're probably going to look at you and be like, okay, screw you. I have a legitimate fear of snakes, and you telling me to just get over it is not going to make me get over it, nor is you putting a snake, you know, in my hands right now going to change how I feel. It could make it much worse. So if we're talking about flooding and that the fact that we don't want to do that, then what do we want to do? I talk to my clients about threshold, and you may have heard the word threshold used before. I separate threshold into green, yellow, and red zones so that the client finds it fairly easy to determine whether or not their dog is in the learning zone and feeling safe, whether or not they're then heading into the yellow zone, which they're showing, starting to show subtle body language signs that they're not comfortable. And then that tips the scales into the red zone, which is reacting, whether it's barking, lunging, snarling, growling, etc. So ensuring that your dog is under threshold is really important if you are trying to make positive change. Exposing a dog to a trigger at such a high level, I've seen this done as well quite a bit, unfortunately. Exposing a dog to a trigger, you know, which then not allows, but it facilitates a reaction, and then you correct them. If you've listened to my previous podcast on why corrections are not recommended, you're setting them up to fail. So it's sort of like, you know, leading somebody down the wrong path and then punishing them for that after you took, you know, said, okay, it's all right. I don't know if that's a good example, but it's unfair, and it does not teach the dog what we want them to do. You know, it really is a guessing game for them, and at some point they're going to not trust you and also become extremely anxious because they're not sure what the circumstances are going to be next time you're with them. So back to what we want to do is keeping them under threshold by using Proximity is a huge thing, right? So making sure that your dog has enough space from triggers. If you're constantly exposing your dog to triggers, even if it's by accident because you live in a really busy area and they continue reacting, you're really just going to be going into damage control mode, and your dog is repeating the behavior over and over in a vicious cycle. So that's really tough, and you have to troubleshoot, how do I, set up training sessions with my dog so that I can facilitate a desirable response and control the environment. Control the environment is a tough one because there is only so much you can control, but there are certain environments that are going to be more conducive to training than others. And space is just a huge one. Counter conditioning and desensitization is what we're going to do to change the dog's emotional response to something that they're fearful of. And if they're under threshold and you are using a very potent reinforcer or food item, and you are executing your training with really stellar timing, and you're consistent, meaning every time the dog sees the stimulus that they are fearful of, it produces the same thing, you're going to start seeing an emotional response change into the positive from a negative. As mentioned, the environment is not predictable and it can be tough to do all the things that I just mentioned. But it's definitely it's the most ethical and effective way to do this. I think another big challenge for people is that it takes time. This is not something that's going to change drastically within a few weeks. It could take months, and it could take 6 months. It could take a year. It really just depends on the dog and the level of fear, and how long they've been in that state. So fast is not effective. It's going to be detrimental if you rush it, and if you switch techniques too, that's going to really be confusing for the dog. So, understanding how counter conditioning and desensitization works is going to be extremely important, and we'll be discussing that in depth in an upcoming podcast. But seeking out a professional that understands, blocking is and overshadowing and extinction trials, and designing a proper training plan that is going to be effective for you and your dog, and keeping track of the reactivity. I've been sending my clients a reactivity log, which they fill out and send back to me every week, and I review it. And so it keeps track of how many reactions the animal has had and the severity of the reactions. And then we compare from week to week, is this improving? And it really is the only way that you can tell is by tracking data. I hope this episode is helpful if you have a fearful dog, or if you have a puppy even, that you really want to avoid using flooding as any type of training method, and to consider that there are much better ways that are going to be more effective and humane.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.